Hello, is this Alex Simmons?
I'll see if the master's available. Do come in.
Ah, good to see you, Boris.
Well, thank you, sir. It's always good to see you. Just that, to help you right with you.
That limp is getting better.
Well, thank you. You know, the corns, they grow so large over here.
Yes, I thought it was the hump on your back, but that seems to have been
what
doing
hump,
okay.
Sir? I hadn't noticed a hump. I'll have to go check.
Hump? What?
I'll be right back. Hey, Boris, is Chris here yet? Yes, sir, he's just arrived. Oh, thank you. Hey, Chris, how you doing?
Good to see you, Chris Ryan, to see Alex Simmons. Always good to see your butler. I haven't seen him in a while.
Well, actually, we try and call him an employee, you know, the butler, servant, you know, that has sort of a connotation that he's a little uncomfortable with.
Domestic executive.
That's good. That's like, what was that movie? It was with Andy Griffith years ago. No Time for Sergeant.
Mm-hmm.
Where he had to clean the toilets. He was in the Army and he had to clean the toilets. So they gave him the title of Permanent Latrine Orderly.
Nicely done.
Yes, yes, yes. Not a toilet cleaner, but a permanent latrine orderly. Yeah.
Right. We don't. There you go. Well, it's all in how you speak.
I hear you're bustling and moving around and doing things.
Well, although I want to be quieter while we record, this is the best my leg has felt in about 3 weeks. So I'm trying to stretch, you know, kind of see. 3 weeks ago, my wife and I went down to
Manhattan. Greenwich.
Yeah, we went down to Greenwich Village with my son, Tyler. He was registering for NYU, and since we knew... your godson.
That's right.
And, you know, we knew the village better than him, so we kind of showed him where it was, left him to his own devices. And we traveled around. We went to Forbidden Planet.
Ah, comic book store for those of you who don't know.
Yes. Yes. One of the great ones, you know. There's a couple of great ones in New York City. Jim Hanley's is still great. That one is still great. There's another one, Uptown Comics, I like a lot. But Forbidden
Midtown?
Planet.
You mean Midtown or Uptown?
Midtown Comics.
Midtown Comics. Yeah, the West 40s, yes.
Yeah. So if you ever visiting New York City and you're a comic fan, go and see all three of them. You will not be disappointed.
And you know, I have to do, you did the shout out for absolutely the three of the well-known Manhattan comic stores, but I have to do a shout out for one of the great supporters of one of my initiatives, which is Kids Comic Con. I have to give a shout out to The Lair, which is a great comic book store in the Bronx. And then we also have to give a shout out to Aw Yeah Comics, which is up in Westchester. And Mark and Franco have been, you know, really supportive and great guys, too. So, you know, let's just let folks know that if you're in New York, there's plenty of places to go to get your comic fix on. Okay.
And while it's not in New York City, I'm going to talk about Joker's Child in Fairlawn.
Ah,
they're the only comic book store because they run it like a bookstore. It's a beautiful store, well run by great people. And they carry, very often, they carry our Blackjack books and my novels. So,
I like them so much already.
last time I was there, I gave them a full set of the Rapid Reads. And we'll see what we do with that. But Joker's Child is fantastic. But all of these are just as, you know, as anyway, they're kind of an aside.
Well, actually, they're the result of what we're going to talk about anyway.
Well, you asked me about my leg, so I'm going to finish that. So,
that's right.
So I went to my house of worship, right, the comic book store, and then Tina, my wife, the goddess, she took us to her house of worship, which was St. Patrick's Cathedral, and, you know, we did everything you did there. We prayed, we lit candles, we did all that, and then when we were leaving, I can only assume that I got a spiritual kick in the pants, like, you know, come back more often. Because we're walking down the stairs.
Why did you go to a comic book store first?
Yeah, one of those things. Yeah, I took a step at the end of the, you know, the last steps on leaving St. Patrick's, and I thought there was one more. So I put my foot down with the force of lowering it to the next step, but I was already on the concrete, and I slammed, and I tore my calf.
Oh.
Yeah.
Oh.
Then, very quickly, I took every bit of advice given to me. So I was doing, you know, 10 different cures, and it wound up that some of them made it worse.
Oh, jeez.
So, yeah, so finally I went to a doctor, and she said, stop everything except ice and elevation. Not even the rice thing, which is rest, ice, compression, you know, elevation. She just wanted ice and elevation. That helped.
So it's IE.
That's what I was sounding when I was trying to walk. Because, I mean, when it first happened, and the first couple of days, I had the Boris Karloff Frankenstein walk.
Oh, you know? Yeah.
Yeah, yeah. And then I went to the Jerry Lewis. It was kind of wackier. And as it got a little better, I was the Pee Wee Herman. You know? And then my colleagues were teasing me. They said I had a pimp walk.
Oh, my goodness.
Sometime yesterday, one of my colleagues came up, and they go, there he is. And I looked around. I said, what are you talking about? He says, there's the Chris Ryan swagger.
Swagger. Oh, you swagger.
They think I have, yeah, they think I have. It's just the, you know, kind of the Bronx people and New York City people walk a little quick. Yeah. And
I find it funny. You were born and raised in the Bronx, but you moved what?
I was 33 when I moved, so the Bronx was solidly in my bones and blood, and always will be.
Okay, all right. Yeah.
So in any case, my leg is better. Let's do that. I did find that it was harder to concentrate on writing with a roughed up leg, but you can find a way.
Okay, well, folks, we've shared a little bit of life with you because all writers, all creators have life. You live life. That's what you reflect in your work.
Yes.
So as we segue from life, and of course, Chris, glad to hear that you're back.
It's it's a multifaceted thing, life, yes?
Yes.
And today we kind of want to talk about the multiple facets of an independent writing life.
See how we segued right in there, folks?
Segues are right, baby.
Yes.
They're not just a goofy ride.
So we had, in the past couple of episodes, if you guys have been paying attention, we've had a couple of things happen. And episode, I guess it would be 43. I don't number these, but I do know that basically we're up to 40. It was 43. So the one before the last one, we talked about deadlines and the importance of deadlines and how some of us have trouble with deadlines and we, you know, the different mindsets about deadlines and all that. And then in episode 44, the last one prior to this, I came on solo. Yes, I did a couple of numbers by myself. And I talked about a struggle that I had had with a project that Chris and I are working on, a Blackjack project. We're working on two separate stories that will be in the same book, which is going to be called Blackjack Trial by Fire and Ice. It's coming out in October. And, you know, there was a struggle that Chris and I had talked about before, but then I talked about my own particular struggle with a particular storyline that I was working on. And some of it is the stuff that many of us go through, you know, in terms of emotional state of mind, blah, 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 blah. So today we're going to, you know, sort of springboard off of that a little bit, but we're you know, instead of focusing as much on the shall we say, the personal and emotional aspect, that we would focus a bit more on some of the professional aspects, and some of that being some of the tasks or the checklist of things that we have to do to produce either graphic novels, comics, or prose books, you know, when you're self-publishing.
Now, before we talk about that, can we talk about one? It's tied to all the stuff you have to do as a writer.
Absolutely.
But every once in a while, you get a shot in the arm. Every once in a while, someone speaks out of the ether and confirms the connection between writer and reader. And oh my God, it makes all the
difference. Nice alliteration there.
Can, yes. Thank you. Can we talk about
what the letter we received?
What we received from Carla?
Yes, yes. We received a really nice, really, really nice letter from one of our listeners, Carla. I won't say her last name because she didn't give us permission. But Carla, she's been commenting on some of the things that we've been doing. And she wrote us this really wonderful letter, which, as Chris just, you know, said, really just lit the bonfires. So, Chris, you want to articulate it?
Well, are we looking to quote from it? Is that what we're doing? Or are we just talking about it?
You can share it in any form that you so choose.
The first thing is that podcasts like this, although, you know, we always invite people to write to us or comment below, you know, just statistically, you know, you usually get one comment out of 5,000 listeners or something. So, you know, it tend not to get a lot. When you hit a certain threshold, then the threads start, and that's a whole other adventure. Mm-hmm. But here we got a letter from Carla, and the first line just filled me full of energy. So I enjoy your podcast. She said, "Dear Alex and Chris, I enjoy your podcast tremendously, just as an oral historian and word lover. Your genuine camaraderie and trust for one another is inspiring." Oh man, that's fantastic. And then she told us a little bit about herself. I hope I pronounce it right, she's a jelly or a groit in the Northwest African tradition, which is a storyteller as far as I can tell.
Yeah, a griot. It's a storyteller, yeah.
Griot. And she has, it sounds like she has a story circle with younger children. And now they're starting to want to see the stories in books and stuff. So it looks like she's going to write down some of the stories she's been telling, which she kind of said, you know, thanks for inspiring me and thanks for reading my mind and answering some of the questions I have. And
even some of the ones she hasn't asked us, we've answered. So I love it.
That's right. I love it. But I wanted to tell her thank you so much for that and how much energy you generate in us by those, you know, simple, kind words. You know, it's always those simple acts of kindness that are so generous that it inspires the mm-hmm. receiver. You know, so I'm glad that the connection is made. I'm glad that we are of some service to her. I can't wait till she writes her collection, and I hope she gets back in touch with us so we can support it and promote it. And please, caller, as much as we loved hearing from you and we'd love to hear again, anybody else, we love it. And thank you again.
If you don't mind, I think I'd like to throw out another little carrot to Carla, since she has already made the commitment to do this, to write down some of these stories. Carla, once you've done that, once you've gone through that process and you've written down these stories, let us know, because I would be maybe having you on for a short segment and ask you about your experience and what was it like, and if you shared it with the children, you know, what was their reaction?
That would be so much fun.
Yeah, there you go. So, see, that's that camaraderie thing.
I think it does tie in to us talking about, you know, the truth about being a writer is to quote Richard Price, he said to me one time, writing is putting your butt in the seat for hours on end. It's a lonely journey. Yes. Mm. And being a modern writer, it's also about getting the word out there, doing your own promotion. That means maintaining a social media presence. And today we'd like to talk a little bit about that stuff because, you know, it's the whole package. You got to do everything these days.
Well, you brought it up, and I think I'd like to sort of set the tone that you expressed earlier, because I think that's a good piece of where we are these days. Is it used to be that, prior to the big surge of independent publishing, you know, you'd get with a mainstream or a small publishing house, and they would put your work out, and they would do the PR and the distribution. And, you know, if they were really good, maybe you'd get on some sort of a tour where you'd be signing in bookstores or whatever, or colleges if it was, you know, that kind of book. But once the independent movement started and really got going, okay, so now we're responsible for all of those aspects. And so, again, it was about basically learning how to promote. What are you doing?
There's a canine in the house named Sonny, he doesn't care if I'm recording or not. He wants to play catch. So he brings one of his toys over, and I'm supposed to take it and throw it so he can go get it. But every once in a while, he decides, I'm also a fighter. So that little growl is him trying to hold on to the toy. I was trying to do it so silently, but I'm busted.
Anything. That's what I was thinking. I said, wow, Chris, go have some toast or something. But okay. Yeah. So anyway, what I'm saying is that, you know, at that earlier point of this whole entrepreneurial campaign or crusade, it was about learning those basics. What's it like to put the books together? What's it like to promote the books, get distribution, and build up a following, whether it's, you know, hand-to-hand, face-to-face, or social media. But these days, and this is the tone that you sort of brought up earlier, there's another hurdle. And this one has, you know, it's not just a fence you have to leap, there's barbed wire wrapped around it. And that is, how much of who you are in terms of your personal, political, social, lifestyle position, how much of that do you share as you're promoting your books, your art? Because there's not only are you now seeking to find the tribe or the community or the fan base that's going to be attracted to you, but you're also dealing with the ones who go, nah, I don't want you here. You know, I don't want to hear your thing. And I'm going to work towards squashing it.
Yeah.
And so that was not a challenge we really had to deal with, to use the phrase, back in the day.
True.
The worst you encountered was, you know, some unpleasant reviews.
Right. I think my latest book is A Simple Rebellion, because it has coming out of kind of red, white, and blue mist. It started generating some knee-jerk reactions. And I, you know what? I think I should have kept them and used them against these clowns. But, you know, die. You know, communist.
That was a quote, folks. That's not him telling me that. Yeah.
These were the responses that I got in some of the promotional material.
So, women, so some of them said die, others said what?
Die was one, commie was another, and fag was another one.
That's with an F, folks, not an S. Yeah.
In doing a little research on these three, they all seem to be high school athletes from the Midwest, Indiana, Ohio, places like that. You know, they weren't hard to find. Because they were responding from their own personal accounts.
Gotcha. Gotcha.
Yeah.
Gotcha.
So it was kind of weird, but you do have to be out there, and you do have to. One of the things that we can tease right now is that both you and I are having our websites redesigned. To give it both of them get a fresh new look. And to become more useful to people who might be interested in any of the stuff that we do. It's part of the reality, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There are some published authors who aren't really on Facebook and all that stuff or Twitter or but that's because they made their bones and found their audience before all of that hit. And, you know, they continue with the traditional ways. But some of the older writers, you know, like Richard Price doesn't really have a media present, but it's the stuff that he does. He's always doing something that HBO is promoting or his book company is promoting. So that's how we get it out there. Walter Mosley also doesn't really do, doesn't seem to do his own social media. But there's Walter Mosley social media out there promoting his latest book, his latest work, and all that sort of stuff. So that's how some of the older ones do. But the younger ones, you know, how do you differentiate yourself when Amazon and other platforms, you know, are distributing hundreds, if not thousands, of new titles per day, you know?
Plus they're also, just to shine this light, they're also changing the algorithms. Not only Amazon is changing algorithms sometimes, but some of the conduits, the independent print on demand or publish on demand platforms that we had to go to, some of them are shrinking or vanishing or changing their rules or being eaten up by a larger organism. And subsequently, you know, it's another way of forming a new set of gatekeepers.
Well,
a new,
you know,
set of challenges.
Amazon got beat up by the, I think it was Five Sisters left. There used to be Seven Sisters, right? The big, big name publishing companies. They got beat up because they were saying that Amazon was giving an even playing field to the small independents than they were to these people who were funneling in hundreds of thousands of dollars a year, maybe even millions a year. As a business plan, I can understand the big companies complaining. Mm-hmm. As an independent publisher, I think it's bordering on unfair labor practice or unfair business practice because, you know, you're making it twice as hard, three times as hard for me to get in there. You know, Amazon bought Goodreads, and Goodreads used to let you do free promotions. You could do free book giveaways, and it would generate reviews, which would generate sales. You know, now that same promotion will cost me $500.
Right. Now, so the thing they used to give for free, you now have to pay $500 for.
Well, I don't know. I don't have $500 to pay for that promotion. So what it does is it knocks me out of that marketplace. You know, Goodreads is no longer the friend to the independent publisher that it once was. You know, and that's because Amazon bought it. Now, you know what? I shop on Amazon like everybody else does, but it's, you know, Bezos, the richest man in the world. He doesn't need to do that to the little guy. And he's the big enough gorilla where he could say to the big publishers, you know what?
Tough noogies.
Yeah, we're not going to destroy these guys because they're going to mature, and there's a way for you to bring them into your families. But it's, you know, it's not right now. So for a while I thought, wow, independent publishing was truly democratic, and you could have a chance, and I was building an audience. And, you know, you're really feeling kneecapped now, and it's frustrating, of course. It's sad, but it's one of those realities. Now,
well, I'm sorry. I just want to say that I think what that does push us to do, as everything does, is to think again, once more, outside the box and start developing or looking for other avenues, you know, doors that have not been closed, back doors, or whatever you want to call them, or develop a new tunnel, you know.
Yeah, and I would say two things to that. If anybody who's an independent publisher has found a way to get ahead on Goodreads and want to counter me, please, there's a comment section below, or you can write.
Email us, right?
Yeah, what's the email address there, Alex?
I knew you were going to do that to me. It's on the, hang on a second, I got to pull it up because I'm not looking at it.
Right.
But it is, I believe, TTDS247.
Yep. At where?
Let me just double check. No, that's our Instagram. Our email is TTDS. So that's tell the damn story. TTDSonair@gmail.
TTDSonair@gmail. And please, anybody who has an opinion on the Goodreads situation, please give me a call. We'd love, or give us an email. We'd love to get an education. And I also, the second point is, I don't want to make people think this is going to be one of those negative complaining episodes. I think you're right. There, you have to find a way. And I think one of the things that is fascinating about being the little guy in the big pond is that it ultimately comes down to the same thing that differentiates your writing. You have to be, and you have to learn to let 100% of yourself out in the writing for it to really sparkle and be unique writing, right? Same mm-hmm. thing has to happen on social media. You have to be true to yourself, and I'll throw an asterisk on that. True to yourself, but asterisk. And the reason I put the asterisk is on is because social media is not the real world. Mm. Social media is a land of special interests, a land of, you know, it's almost like a sci-fi fantasy land, you know. The hobbits go out of Hobbiton and go off, you know, they're on the beginning of their journey, and they find the big bear guy, the Bill, right? And it's like, there's a troll or something. That's what happens when you go on social media. You're going to find some people who are supportive and some people who just love to be against whatever you're talking about.
An adversary, you know? Yes, and either a fair or an ugly adversary, but they're there only to challenge you, you know, to make it difficult. And again, not to go into the deep, depressing, you know, place with this. A lot of what writing is, a lot of what creativity is not only being inspired to again, compose a piece of music or choreograph a dance or write a story or deliver a remarkable acting performance or any of the other aspects of creativity, but it's also about finding the courage and the fortitude, the intestinal fortitude, to go forward with your idea, to put yourself out there into the arena and to lay bare that creative concept, that thing, and hope that you find an audience, that the emperor sits there along with the rest of the fans and the thumbs go up instead of down. But if they do go down, how do you deal with that? Right. But first, you've got to be seen. The work has to be seen.
And I think you have to be aware of how you're being seen. For example, on Instagram, if someone follows me, I'll follow them back. But over that next, same thing happens with Twitter, but on Instagram, over the next couple of days, if all I see is promotion of me, promotion of this new person I'm following, and it's, you know, buy my book, unfollow. I have to see more person than product. That's a good rule of thumb. You must put out.
Interesting, I like that. More person than product.
More person than product. You know, on my Instagram, I'll put odd things that I see. I'll put, the cat I usually cast as my
editor.
My editor. And the dog is just, he's just ridiculous. So he gets in there as a dog. Eventually, he might get a job at Seamus and Nunzio, my production company.
But I'm thinking right now, security, personally.
Security. I speak about my wife as the goddess. You know, it's kind of given her a title that is easy to latch on to an image, you know. Mm-hmm. She thinks that I'm ridiculously overstating the matter. But it's another way of showing the personality. So I try and do those, you know, three or four
but
different things.
That's your personal account. That's your
No. Those are that not on my personal Facebook account. My Instagram account is called Chris Ryan Writes. My Twitter account is called Chris Ryan Writes, and my blog is Chris Ryan Writes. And eventually, the upcoming new website is Chris Ryan Writes. And there's a Christopher Ryan author page on Facebook. In all of those areas, this is how I approach social media. Excuse me, I'm on the air.
Yeah, but he's agreeing with you. He's agreeing with you.
Yes, he is. He's like, it's so fantastic. And these are the elements that I put in there. I have a personal Facebook account that is mostly populated by old neighborhood friends and high school friends. And, you know, some of that same stuff will go on there. Or, you know, some stuff about the old neighborhood or whatever. But it's the Chris Ryan Wright stuff that I'm talking about. I may talk about and I may put on Chris Ryan Wright's some passion for, you know, what's called classic rock or the new book. I posted a picture of Walter Mosley's new book, John Woman. And that the angle with it was my wife, who works in a library now, you know, she saw it and she knows I like the author, so she brought it right home. You know, took it out for me, put it right home. So that's, you know, reason she's a goddess number 4,000 and whatever, right?
Okay.
So
it, well,
you know, so all those things will happen, and then maybe the fifth or sixth post will be, you know, of a blackjack or yeah, well, it's, you know, it's here available, you know, and rather than say buy it now and then it's kind of like, you know, a horrible weather weekend, need some reading to keep your mind off it, boom.
Thank you for listening to part one. Now, stay tuned for part two.
The podcast you just heard was published with Anchor. Got something you want to say to the creator of this show? Send them a voice message using the Anchor app, free for iOS and Android.